Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Pentagram, dedicated to Henry Farman. In the year of the primal force, the dawn of terrestrial birth.
Good afternoon, good evening, good whatever. This is Alan Averill. This is Agitators Anonymous, episode 180-something or other. So during the week on my YouTube channel, I had a great chat with Joe from Gamma Bomb. We called it Metalploitation. I think it was an uncomfortable mix of metal and exploitation, just talking about awful heavy metal. And seeing as the chat was, I think, pretty funny, and part two is coming out next week on YouTube, I thought for a change, seeing as there's 13 of those Metal Salvage chats, which people seem to really enjoy over on the YouTube channel, I would put that first episode and part of the chat here today on the podcast. In reality, they probably should have their own podcast, and there's quite a lot of content there to go through, and I think it's pretty funny stuff. But every now and again, I like to post a little bit of them here on the Agitators Anonymous podcast. And I think this chat is worthy of inclusion. If you've watched the YouTube version already, well then, apologies for that. You can listen twice to the dulcet tones of our voice. And if you haven't looked at it, well then, I think you're in for a kind of a treat. There's a lot happening in the world right now. Last week, I addressed some of the history of the Middle Eastern conflict, at least as I saw it. Like I said, ain't no historian, but tried to put a little context in the dates and some of the lineage. As I think some things are getting misunderstood by people who are too quick to jump to their tribal instincts. So you can't say that the podcast hasn't tried to handle some issues of some serious issues. But for levity's sake, today will be a chat about awful heavy metal. The show, as ever, is sponsored by Metal Blade Records. You can go to indiemerch.com/Metal Blade Records and use the promo code AA2023 to get 10% off your order. Also, as promised, I think last week, I was going to announce that the show also has a sponsorship from a band called Behioch, a band from the northwest of Ireland. Originally were inspired by Burzum, Eel Yarn, and early Primordial. You should be able to hear a little bit underneath what I'm reading now. And I'm going to include a whole song at the end of this chat. So you can, if you stick around for the chat between me and Joe that's upcoming, you can hear a whole song at the end. Behioch, and the new release is called Beowulf. Yeah, it's good stuff, good stuff. Very solid. Grim black metal with a bit of Celtic Frost, Bathory, and some more death metal in it. And the links to the band will be in the description underneath. So if you're out there in a band and you're thinking, this sounds like a good way to promote something in the future, get in touch with me. You can do the exact same thing. All right. So here's the chat between me and Joe about awful metal. Metalploitation. Is it metalsploitation? That doesn't sound right either. Metalploitation. At the end of the chat, you will hear the whole of this Behioch song, so stick around for that.
Might as well start where you mean to begin. Look, in honor of the potentiality of tonight's chat.
Virgin Steel, man.
Yeah. It was at the bottom,
light a candle for Virgin Steel. Look at that, man. It's like an old woman at mass being all like, this is for you guys.
Oh, no, sorry, that's too black metal. It should be more like, yeah, yeah. I bought this like Wacken in 98. Wacken in 98. We played, and we hadn't a fucking clue what we're doing. We didn't even bring the right plugs. We brought like freaking plugs. We didn't even put the hour on the clock on our clocks, different to Dublin. Simon got fucked
up. An hour late for your gig, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was in the crowd wandering around, and Kieran was on the stage, and I was like, what's going on? We're not playing for it. He goes, dude, like fucking 15 minutes. Oh, yeah. I was like, what? Fuck. What? And I ran around, and I didn't have time to put any fucking, you know, black metal accoutrement on. And, could be at the time wrong. Simon got fucked up. I got fucked up. It was a mess of a gig. We were like trying, it was 98. We've only just replayed on the floor in pubs and stuff. And like, the people are like, so what do you want in your monitors and all this kind of crap? And after us was Exciter and Riot. And it was Exciter with Jack Belange, you know, and it was like super powerful. Lovely. Exciter. And they just like crushed us like little bugs.
The Dark Command and all that. Yeah.
Oh, that, which for me are the best Exciter records, but we can discuss that at another moment. But so, and Virgin Steel played, and this was...
Man, have you ever noticed actually, anytime, I was going to say, anytime you regale us with a heavy metal story that involves other people from Primordial, your impersonation of everyone from Primordial is if they're working in the docks in Dublin. They're very like, oh, Roy, well, boys, how's the goings?
Yeah.
And having met them, none of them fucking talk like that. The proletariat. Yeah.
Well, it's an artistic license. They're not here to defend themselves. And, you know, you can't, you know, so.
Yeah, yeah.
But it gets worse. So that we played, we were awful. I bought this shirt, and this was a big album in 98. I loved it. Invictus, still one of my favorite heavy metal records. And me and Kieran stayed out all night drinking. We got on Golgoroth's tour bus, which was heading off to like the Baltic somewhere to Poland. We got let off somewhere before we were taken away. Stephen O'Malley was there. And Stephen, from Sun and everything, he stayed on the bus and woke up in like Gdansk or something stupid. And he was supposed to be staying. He was supposed to be staying with me in my room or something. I woke up the next day, realized, where the fuck is he? And he woke up in Poland. But we stayed out all night. I was found by some heavy metal helpers underneath, like at a train station, at some three stations out from Wacken or four stations out. Someone came over and got the cops because they thought I might be dead or something. They put a blanket over me. Eventually, found my way back to the hotel. It was 10 a.m. And who's the first person standing outside the breakfast room, looking resplendent in his waistcoat with his six pack showing his David device? Like just standing there, whilst they're waiting for the lift, and me and Kieran are like, come back at like 10 a.m., dirt and covered in mud and stinking, but I'm wearing this t-shirt. And I'd introduced myself briefly earlier on, and I was there like, still a bit pissed. I was like, how do you keep your voice, blah, blah, blah. And he just looked at me and goes, by not doing this, man. I was like, yeah, probably, okay. Went back at the hotel room.
Take advice from this man who's like probably done about 20 shows in his entire life, like, you know.
Yeah. Well, Virgin Steel were touring quite often back in the 80s. But yeah, anyway, that was his advice. I went back upstairs, went, lay down. And then half an hour later, the alarm rang. And it was like back to Dublin. So that's the adventure of this Virgin Steel t-shirt, which I'm pretty sure has not been worn pretty much since then. But I do love this record. I think it's fucking one of the best heavy metal records.
Well, this is a very good gateway to what we're going to talk about today. Because... Yeah. One of the first things that we should talk about is the new Virgin Steel record.
Oh.
And what do you think of that?
Well, I have I have to declare somewhat of a conflict of interest because I did organize two. Virgin Steel are on the same booking agency as Primordial. They've been there for years. And the band has just been sort of sitting on ice a bit, and I said to the big boss, I'd really love to try and book Virgin Steel some shows. And I booked one in Spain and one in Crete for them. So I would declare that. It would be remiss of me to not declare somewhat of a conflict of interest. But
well, I suppose I should do the same thing and say, if I'm going to start slagging off the production on the new Age and Steel album, I wrote some of the songs in that record. So, you know.
Yeah.
Although we scoff, we are also guilty at the same time. You know?
Yes, of course. Well, look, I mean, I love Virgin Steel. I love all the way. I love the first couple of albums, the 80s records, of course. Marriage of Heaven and Hell, 1 and 2, especially 2. Two is brilliant. I love it. It's so incredibly over the top, but it's just such great, epic heavy metal, brilliant singing. And then The House of Atreus, 1 and 2 is like, I love those records as well. And I'm not being like daft here. Invictus is one of the best heavy metal records, epic heavy metal records ever made, I reckon. I think it's fucking brilliant.
Well, how do you figure it then in the lineage of things? Because they're obviously not quite, you know, like Manowar in 81, but like not quite like, you know, in the later stages of US power metal. So where does Virgin Steel fit into this?
Well, Virgin Steel 1 is like 81, I think. And okay. So it's one of the first ever new wave-ish of American heavy metal records. It's just after Fire Down Under, I think, but it's before Battle Hymns. So it's more keyboardy, it's more rainbowy. It's got some Queen and stuff in it. But it's a great record. And that was Music for Nations 1, if I'm not correct. It was Music for Nations' very first license.
Wow.
In Europe. Let me just look.
R.A.P. Martin Hooker. Martin Hooker, the guy who set up Music for Nations, died there last year.
Oh, really?
So did.
Okay. Independently, it was released in the beginning of 1982. First album released by Music for Nations. Yeah, I wasn't wrong. Subsequently released by Mongol Horde Records and Maze Records in Canada. It's a baffling cover. I think we talked about it before on our weird covers one, where it's got like a little guy on a kind of like an electronic sort of snake. It's not the guy with the little tweezers who's like trying to feed a bee or something. It's like a little guy on a... Can you see it there? Oh, no, it's like... Yeah, he's on a... I'll bring it up on the screen.
The album cover.
It is a little guy... And he is sort of riding a robotic snake, which he's also attacking. So,
snake monster.
Yeah.
Because he has a sword.
I think maybe there's one of the things that's happened is that we were talking about it not so long ago, is that, you know yourself, there comes a part or moment when, for a lot of old bands, where they stop rehearsing. You know, because they're living in different places and it becomes a bit fragmented. People start to get used to trading files too much. And I think that's partly what happened to Virgin Steel. It's maybe that they ceased to be a band and he just was like, I can do this on my own. And just like keyboard drums.
I just PO box you this demo.
Yeah. And then those demos become the album and people go, well, we don't really need a big studio and a drum sound and whatever. And I think a lot of bands who do that, they suffer a lot. And the Virgin Steel is one of them. A little bit of editing on the amount of the amount of songs on all of these records, and maybe make the demo and then send it to someone else to mix it. Because if you listen to the new Virgin Steel, it's just, even the riffs that are okay are kind of compressed
unreal
by this dinky sound, you know. But like, I know lads who could, if you sent them all this,
it's the same as like what I was going to say is, I think it's exactly the same as the new Savage Grace and things like that, where the budget was clearly $10,000 and $8,000 went on, you know, canopes and tapas and things like that. And $2,000 went into the drum programming and that was it.
I mean, like, it's not, you know yourself, like, the for people who don't necessarily understand sometimes, it's not impossible to program drums, but sample a great drum sound for those, you know, triggered drums. You don't need to go. If you want to take the bass drum from Rainbow Stargazer, you kind of can. So there's no excuse for a drum machine sounding like a drum machine in 1987 anymore. You can sample a great snare sound, you know.
Well, listen to the last Hellripper record. It's all computer drums and it sounds fantastic. It sounds really authentic. But I think you need to go in and start moving things slightly off the grid, it doesn't sound as, you need to sort of start fucking about with it a little bit more.
Yeah, for speed metal or something. Yeah, I mean, if you remember the band Bewitched, remember them? I used to love this record, Pentagram Prayer. I think it's one of the, I still listen to it and I still think it's got killer riffs, but it's because it's a drum machine. It's just like, come on, how hard is it to get a drummer to play a straight rock beat to it, you know, and record it on
probably in I was going to say, in 1987, it was probably incredibly difficult to get a drum machine to fucking do that.
Yeah, sure. But no. I mean, Bewitched is like 1998 or something. Anyway, I mean, it's just like, it sounds like to me, like Virgin Steel is kind of like Edward Pursino, the guitar player who's on all those great albums. It sounds like they don't sit down and write together, and they don't rehearse, and don't rehearse with the drummer writing songs. And then you just go, well, I can do it in front of the computer. And so, you know, similar things.
A weird one, because in some ways we're kind of shitting on these bands and also praising them, in the sense that, like, obviously big Virgin Steel fans, but holy moly, like, you know, the last record was definitely made as an afterthought, like, you know, where the name, and that's what I want to start talking about, was the Savage Grace record, which was the same thing, where they're like, we have this name, so maybe we could, like, do a demo for a couple of $100 and then just bring it out, see if anyone buys it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I will say about that is I do think there's, and knowing Dave a bit, there is an awful lot of thought that goes into what he's still doing. Like the you know, the messages between us are, he's super involved. He's not throwing it out there, just going like, bleh. I think there's almost too much thought, and maybe handing it off to someone else to mix might be good. But this is not really a, you know, like, it's... Well, we might as well sort of reach around to the topic of the conversation, which is well, I mean, I was just listening to Original Sin and Exorcist in sort of, you know, brushing up on this, and there are two albums made by Virgin Steel basically in '86 as kind of like pretend records. They wrote the songs, and then, you know, obviously we're given some money by this record label. And
the whole vibe is this kind of thing called, well, I guess it exists now, because since the 90s and stuff, like, heavy metal has been a thing that you could exploit. But back in the day, the idea of metalsploitation, that you were going to...
Metalsploitation, that's the word. Yeah. That's the name of the YouTube of the podcast.
Specifically try and find some awful heavy metal and then, like, do some sort of rip-off of it in the hope that you could sell it. Because the thing people will not realize these days is, back in the day, you just went into a record shop and looked at the front cover and were like, is this worth, you know, is this worth a fiver? And you didn't know until you got home, in which case, if you heard any of these records that we're going to talk about, you'd immediately be looking for your receipt.
Yeah, you would. I mean, the thing about it is, I was just on the... Like, this is this label Cobra Records from Canada.
Yeah.
And according to the Wikipedia, Piledriver, the exalted Piledriver, the metal inquisition, sold between that Stay Ugly, according to the website, 500,000 copies. And they're just...
Who wrote this Wikipedia page? I guarantee it was the exalted Piledriver himself. Like,
yeah. RIP, I think, by the way. Didn't that guy die?
From beyond the grave, that's even more chilling.
Yeah. and I mean, I read a big interview with this Cobra Records. Cobra Records was like a subsidiary of some other bigger label. And I read an interview with the guy who was basically, he was into indie music, whatever was going on, but he played the guitar. And the label boss kind of, this is what I remember, I said to him, we've got to get in on this metal stuff. Do you know any metal bands? We've got to sell, because metal's selling a lot, you know, and we've got to get some... Got to get some band. He goes, well, I haven't a clue. And then they just hatched this idea, which was, well, you could play the guitar. If I buy you 20 records, will you just make a record that copies these records? So he went out and bought, like, Black Metal and a bunch of other things, Venom and some other stuff, Slayer and stuff. So him and his girlfriend apparently wrote Piledriver, the Metal Inquisition, in one weekend. Got a local metalhead in as the cover, who's the guy. I think he sings on it, maybe not, I'm not sure. I think it's maybe the guitar guy, because it's a drum machine again. And then they release it, and it sells like, I mean, I think it sold really well, because I think they won some awards and stuff.
So basically the deal was that Cobra Records was a legit label in Canada that used to license records. So they licensed, like, Creator Records and whatnot, Death Angel, like, lots of big ones. And I guess what the deal was that, as you said, the subsidiary that it was owned by, they were making money out of this. And they said, wait a minute, there's actually a lot of money in this heavy metal stuff here. So what if we use some of the profits from this to try and make some, what you would call, cheap market knockoffs?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, do you remember when you were a kid and you would go to the local market and they would have a Liverpool top that would maybe not say Crown, it didn't say Crown Paints on it, but it might say Crown Pants on it or something.
Well, it's that Alan Partridge. Oh, no, it's Tommy Hilfiger. No.
Yeah, but you know that I think that's the vibe. That's so obviously it was the guys at the label said, listen, these guys in Pile Driver know what they're doing. They made a record, so let's get them. And so did they just record a second Virgin Steel record, or what was the deal?
Well, what I understood happened was that this guy in the Cobra Records employee, he wrote Metal Inquisition, and then he kind of got into metal a bit. So he said in the interview, it was an interview with them. There was this great fanzine, quite a famous German old tape trader, 80s heavy metal guy, and he used to have this, like, I think it's called Iron Fist or Iron Pit or there's something, The Pit maybe, or some Frank, is it Frank
Stover? Was it Iron Pages or Snake Pit?
Maybe it's Frank Stover. I know, because I used to write to him in like maybe 91, 92, and his fanzine was great. And then he got moved away from black and thrash to more like traditional heavy metal. But he interviewed this guy and he said that him and his girlfriend wrote that record. And then they kind of got into metal a bit and he wanted to have the band, but the label were like, no, you're not having the band. It's our creation. So then somehow they got in touch with Virgin Steel and Edward Prosino and David DeFeist. They wrote the second album, Stay Ugly, because they were beginning to be known for this in the industry, because they'd written Exorcist Nightmare Theater, which is Virgin Steel, with an affected vocal. And oddly enough, I just listened to it. And how much does the first song sound like a monomar? And like the riff, the singing... kind of sounds like Johan a bit. Anyway,
I think that there's like one of the things that we'll find, like talking about all these bands in this kind of genre, is that no matter how convincingly you can, you know, program the drums or riff the guitars, the singing is always an afterthought.
Yeah.
And like especially the later on we get some of the singing, it's just kind of background. that's not a joke. That's actually what some, and we're going to link some of this stuff on this video, but
Oh, some of it you have to. I'm sure we could probably play some of it in the background, but I don't know if that would get the thing pulled. But some of it can't be copyrighted. Some of this, what's this record that the label were going to go on to talk about, the Trash Queen and all that kind of stuff. This blew my mind. I went on a whole YouTube, as much of it as I could find, and it just gets fucking. You dig yourself into this hole, and you're like, you come out, and you're like, your brain is like, what the fuck.
But basically, going back to Cobra Records, then the records that they made without the involvement of the band, obviously. So, is it the guys from Virgin Steel? They made the Pile Driver record, or the second Pile Driver record,
Stay Ugly. Yeah. So,
is there anyone involved from the first Pile Driver, or was that just like?
No, I think the label just took it from the guy who wrote it, but it wasn't really. Wasn't really his band, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know how it ended up in the hands of Virgin Steel. I'm sure there's some fucking heavy metal nerds there who are.
I guess they were just hanging about in the studio making their record, and the guys from the label said, "Listen, while you're here, do you fancy recording this Pile Driver record? We're going to record another album called Nightmare Theater by this band Exorcist," which is like such a cool. And if you see the cover of it, it's such a nearly authentic idea, isn't it?
Exorcist Nightmare Theater.
Yeah. It's nearly like if you looked at it at a glance, you would say this seems exactly like a legit, you know, like a Repulsion style first wave band, right?
Yeah, it looks, it's 1986. It looks a bit like a Death SS. So it's got zombies or something on the front. And when you listen to it, you're like, it is a drum machine, but there's kind of cool riffs in it. It's not bad, but it's got like affected shift. Yep. Death metal vocals, like it's not got authentic possessed vibes going on or anything. It's not a bad record at all, actually.
And there's actually, this is the kind of the most surprising thing, because the Pile Driver record, the Exorcist Nightmare Theater record, it is kind of, you can tell that they were done in a very, very kind of cheap and unimaginative manner in some ways, but there's a record called The Lords of the Crimson Alliance.
Have you
heard it?
Yeah.
It's great. It's kind of like, it's weird. It's kind of like nearly like a Black Sabbath album from the 80s, full of really loud keyboards, and it's weird as fuck, but like it's class. It's kind of like a mix between Rainbow and Sabbath and low budget. I don't know.
Yeah, it's okay. It's rumored that this mysterious band is called Grudge. A band called, this is from Encyclopedia Metallum. It's rumored that this mysterious band is Grudge, playing under pseudonyms, similar to what Ralph Hubert did with Mick on Delta. What?
Yeah.
Both bands recorded their albums at Fabulous Lenny's Metal Shop.
Fabulous Lenny?
Yeah, on the 1988 Crack the Sky cut. So it's it's 1986. All these records seem to be all around 1986. Is there somebody kind of went, trash was getting huge, and they were sort of like, yeah, let's just make some money out of this. But Lords of Crimson Lions, on that label, there was also last label, Grudge Records. Yeah, let's have a look at them.
It's a weird one as well, because actually, I don't know if you've ever heard this record from the Mega Vault. It's a Megaforce compilation record. It's got like stuff like Battle Beyond the Stars by Medieval Steel on it.
But there's a band. Say it again, what's it called?
It's called From the Mega Vault, or right, the Mega Vault. But there's a couple of bands on it that were totally made up as well, where like Megaforce had some musicians hanging about in the studio, and they're like, okay, I think one of them's called Imperious Rex.
Okay, I see. Here we go. Medieval Steel, Battle Beyond the Stars, Overkill, Sonic Reduce, Ain't No Loser, Exciter, Death Revenge, TT Quick.
Brilliant. And these are all great songs. Like, you know.
Wing and a Prayer, Raven, Take It Away, Imperious Rex, Red Diamond. Yeah.
So that's a made-up band. That's just a band that Johnny Z had some guys in the studio, and they're like, okay. I think they were recording like an alternative rock or something album, and he said, is there any chance you could do a metal song for my compilation?
Blessed Death, Painkiller, Blessed Death. Wow, their first album was great, Blessed Death. I have that somewhere. What was it called? Killer Be Killed? No?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. SOD, Ram It Up, which isn't on Speak English or Die. Anthrax, Panic. Blue Cheer, Boney Maroney. What are they doing at the end of that record?
It's one of these weird ones that they were part of Megaforce's roster in the mid-80s. I guess they got back together. And they were like, hey, this heavy rock music is back in vogue, so we're going to give it a bash, like, you know.
So it's mainly a cassette compilation, and it's if you're listening, pleasure recorded in Dolby.
Lovely. But it is worth a punt, because there's a bunch of songs by bands like Exciter and SOD and stuff on it that are totally unique to that, and they're like, you know.
Well, the Overkill, that song is used, that's Dead Boys, but that song, Field of Fire, right?
I think it's probably on a tape, and like, I guess this was the shtick back in the day, like the version of Lesbians, the studio version by Nuclear Assault, it's not on any recording apart from the cassette, you know, so
right.
I said the same thing, so occasionally a cassette would have a different...
Similar with Punishment for Decadence, that this confusing cover of Jimi Hendrix was only on the cassette.
Yeah, but that's probably right. Because they're like, this fucking sucks, like, you know?
That's such weird, because it starts with darn, 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 but it's like as if they cut off the swell of the first note. It's like they edited the tape and actually fucking just stick it on there. I think it's totally incongruous. Like, it doesn't fit at all with the fucking... It used to drive me mad when I was a kid. Like, what the fuck is this doing on the... Anyway, whatever. I'm on a big Coroner binge at the moment, the first four records. What a fucking band.
Yeah, great band. We're playing a gig with them now next month in Mexico. It's like a...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's a Hellstar, Coroner, and Dark Angel. So that'll be going to bed at 6 o'clock in the evening day, getting extremely drunk and watching that.
Tasty. I saw Coroner at Hellfest for the first time, and it was really good, although they didn't seem... I'm not sure they really understood that most people were there to hear Reborn Through Hate and Mass Jackal and in the first couple albums, because they persisted in playing like a couple of songs off Grin, as if like this is the album we've all been waiting to hear. I mean, I admired it in a way. I wouldn't mind it in a 90-minute set, but it's kind of like, all right, come on, can we get to
Reborn? You get a lot of bands like Rage do that as well, where they place such an importance on like the album from 92 or 93, as if this is their best or most recognized work, you know. But I don't know.
Don't You Feel the Winter? My favorite bit is when he's singing and he steps away from the microphone just randomly and then goes back to it, and you're supposed to say, because I used to have this amazing Noise Records video compilation that we used to play
Doomsday News, is it?
Yeah, but it had like Sado, Gambling Fool, and if you've never seen that video, that's quite something. They're all playing on the stairs with all these girls walking by, and yeah, and then Sado, Scanner, Celtic Frost, Cheery, oh, cheers. Creator doing Toxic Trace, which is a fucking great video. Voivod crushing everybody with what's the song from Dimension Atrios about AIDS? You're going to the science
hospital.
Ravenous Medicine.
Ravenous Medicine, isn't it? Yeah, it's a great song.
Yeah,
it's weird though, like that video and the Toxic Trace video are so alike. They all have really, really bad kind of VHS green screen on them. And
yeah, yeah. But they're kind of cool.
Is there like a Death Row song on that as well? And like maybe DAM? because I remember seeing the DAM video and being like, man, this is so insanely low budget. Like,
I'm not sure. Mass Jackal is on it. And of course, it's quite film noir, sort of gloomily filmed. They were just so ahead of everybody in terms of aesthetics, Carter. Their video looks like, actually, this is pretty mature kind of stuff, you know, like a politician at a stand and sort of people running by from sort of a shot body down a kind of dimly lit tunnel.
Such a weird story, though, as well, don't they? It's kind of like Manowar, a couple of them were Black Sabbath roadies on the Heaven and Hell or the Black and Blue tour with Blue Oyster Cult.
Yeah.
I think. But anyway, yeah, that's how they got together. And it was the same thing with Karner. Karner are all Celtic Frost roadies.
Yeah, so well, listen to the Coroner demo, Death Cult. I mean, Tom G is singing on some of it, or if not all of it, for seemingly no reason. I don't really understand as well. You know, but there's a great deal on one of the Doomsday News compilations. There's a song called Hate, Fire and Blood by Coroner, which isn't different than any record. It's a fucking banger. It's like when you could find, you know, like After the Attack, Creator is only on the After the Attack, Pleasure to Kill, Picture Disc. That's fucking one of my favorite Creator songs.
Yeah, like there's a whole bunch of things like that as well, especially in thrash, where you would see bands like Exodus or Nuclear Assault having songs that were specifically only on B-sides. And kind of one of the weird things about them is they tend to not be on Spotify. Like, it tends to be the sort of thing you have to go and have a look around YouTube and you'll find songs from the Game Over session or whatever.
What was the Voivod one? Cockroaches, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was good.
That's a cool picture disc. Yeah. Anyway, what are we
talking about? Like, we're going back to, like, because I guess, like, it's weird. Like, the VHS explosion is part of this whole idea that, like, you know, people realized that metal fans had a bunch of money. And, you know, Metallica or Iron Maiden were going to bring out a record every couple of years. So, in the meantime, there was a whole bunch of time to exploit cash out of them. And you saw this in movies as well. In Italy in the 1980s, they were always making, like, ripoffs of Robocop or ripoffs of Terminator. Yeah. And, you know, because the whole idea was that basically if something like Robocop came out in September, it mightn't get to England or France until the next year. Things didn't have an immediate release the way they do nowadays. So there was an opportunity where you could maybe confuse people. You know, like a dad who's gone through a divorce and he's forgot that it's one of his kids' birthdays and he has to buy a CD at a petrol station. And CDs in the petrol station are of that nature. So that's the kind of... that's the sort of level of exploitation we're looking at here. But
it's kind of weird because this is obviously, you are maybe what you do is you got known for being a session musician who could write these records within the sort of grimy, the grubby basement confines of the industry. And maybe it was worth $5,000 or $10,000. You're going to go, could you make an album like Somewhere Between Possessed and Slayer? Okay, that's fine. Do that, you know?
Yep. Exactly, especially whenever, as we were talking about with Cobra Records and stuff, they were making so much money off licensing albums. They were like, this is a no-brainer here, guys. We should just make a record and we'll make 100% of the profit instead of having to pay a licensing fee. And I don't even know if these bands, they must have been on some labels, but there was a band called Thrash Queen. I'm not 100% sure where they were from. And there was a band called Killer Fox, and they were from America.
Oh.
And so basically, I think these two records were made in about 1983 or 1984.
Hang on. I've been all over this, man. I have your link here up Cobra Records. Well, no, I'm Cobra Records Canada. So what was the one you sent me this? Okay. Metal Enterprises. Okay. So this is, I mean, this is, hang on a second.
This is the gold here, guys.
Oh,
destroy all your Dark Throne records immediately because you're not going to need them anymore after this.
This occupied most of my Friday evening. So curses and blessings to you on an equal regard, because I've been obsessed with this label now and sending it to people to annoy them. Well, for the last 2 days. So
the gist though, like basically, was that to preset the scene that this guy was a manager for Crossfire or some Belgian, or anyway, he was a manager for some band in the mid 80s and he decided to set up a label, and he licensed two of the worst albums ever, which is an album called Thrash Queen, which is the first ever female thrash band, then another album called Killer Fox. And I don't know, I guess maybe part of the deal of his license with them was that the band had to surrender their rights to the name.
It's insane. I mean, we should first of all say, for anybody listening, I'll put the link up. It's the Corrosive.
It's a great article.
Yeah, it's a brilliant article. Whoever's written it has written it with a great sense of humor. But that's a website, a heavy metal website, full of really amazing stuff. I've been rooting around it now for all we can. Reminds me of the kind of thing that I was delighted in finding when I first got the bloody internet, like somewhere in on a tiny screen waiting for this thing to load up, you know, in 1990, whatever it was. And I was spending my time looking for, you know, obscure fucking heavy metal records. I remember one called The Boneyard, which was just...
Yes.
It listed, yeah, it was amazing. It just listed all the underground records from every country, you know. But Metal Enterprises, this is the name of the label. So the light of day, somewhere around 85, 86. Very hard to tell exactly this is what the guy's writing, since very few of their albums stated release or recording dates. And the first three were licensed, Killer Queen, Killer Fox, and Thrash Queen. I don't know, if you need to go and listen to Thrash Queen, it will break your brain. It's just...
The idea that you would want to license this record to release it in Europe is just insane.
Yeah.
You cannot believe... It sounds like Adam Craft were playing down a hall and there was a woman screaming.
Yeah,
screaming is too much. It's not even screaming. It's kind of like a very loud, high-pitched conversation.
Yeah, people are trash. People are trash. Like a sort of a French woman. It's like as if we were sitting here drinking. You went, somebody next door having a fucking fight or delivering a lecture, and we turned out the music we're listening, and we could hear somebody being berated next door. But that's how the vocals sound. It's fucking. It's mental. And it's kind of captivating in a very weird way. I listened to almost the whole thing, and it just kind of, what the fuck? Kind of, you know? So the Metal Enterprises came to define the term metal-ploitation. Metal, does that work?
Metal-sploitation.
Metal-sploitation.
Exploitation.
He hasn't got the S there. He just has ploitation. And they did actually license or release a Boozer Uncle's record, which is what was their cash cow. And obviously then after that, they tried to kind of cash in. So... The sidebar has some of the most amazing records. J.J. Tull.
I don't even know if you could... Like, this, the song that I heard by J.J. Tull has actually disrupted my life quite badly. Like, it's
I sent this link to about half a dozen people trying to annoy them. It's Lily Marlene. It's like, you know, the bit in Blazing Saddles where Lily von Stuck sings the German Schlager song. Get your feet off the stage, cowboy. Are you in show business? Or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like German Schlager, but I don't know, 1920s. I mean, we'll say Brechtian. Well, we can't use that word.
Schlager is definitely a word that I would associate with it.
But with a drum machine and like punk rock, oi kind of riffs under it, but a woman singing in a German accent. Would that be fair?
I would say if you could imagine a really badly recorded version of Dr. Steen by Halloween with someone singing Lily Marlene on top of it.
I think you're giving it too much musical credit there. It's like somebody like an oi. Basically, a lot of this is like a punk oi guy who can play the guitar a bit. He has a mate who can do weird kind of solos and some of the other records. Well, so talk about.
The thing that's very important that
it goes like Spice,
like the band is called J.J. Tull. Like, what does that tell you about the idea? Like, J.J. Tull.
But the cover is kind of like a kind of
oh my god,
it's like a stage with the curtains kind of half drawn and somebody like going to sing, but there's like amps and fog behind. It's
absolutely insane. That's the thing that I would say about all these Metal Enterprise things. The thing, like the Cobra Records, you could tell that they were probably trying to seriously have a punt.
Yeah.
You know, like somebody who made a movie called Friday the 15th or something. They were just trying to make a couple of bucks. This is, like, it really makes you think, were they serious when they did it, or...
We're on the tip of the iceberg here. Like, J.J. Tull has actually, as you say, it's kind of haunting me for the weekend. It's I've thought about it at least half a dozen times over the last 3 days, and I'm kind of happy and quite upset about that at the same time.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane music, but I guess it kind of sets the template for all these Metal Enterprises records.
There's a record here called Satan's Servants. This is insane. Okay, now his review is, your halfway uncle's four-track demos from hell. Dressed in a remarkably blasphemous sleeve, which it is quite mental, the sleeve. I don't know how they got it pressed. Totally lifeless after-ski bar band covers of Mambo Sun, San Francisco's Hey Sugar Sugar, but done in a sort of
again, Schlager type style is the kind of vibe, isn't it?
But it's got
always a lighthearted kind of like shit.
But it's got something that's supposed to be like satanic or evil about it. This one, which I'm going to get before we have to go on to the next video, Godzilla. This is, if you ever had nightmares about what an AOR reggae crossover played by German retards would sound like, this is this guy's review of it. And the song is I Followed the Zombie. And it's like 80s thrash metal meets reggae, but all played slightly off time and out of kilter. Like, it's actually maddening to listen to. Like, it sort of drove me mad.
But this is the thing. There is a wee bit of a H.P. Lovecraft style buzz about this, in the sense that, like, if you hear the music of Eric Zahn, like, you know, that's contained in these records, it's... I keep wanting to go and being like, there's so many other records, I should go and listen to it. And they always start with the same, like, the intro is always some going,
and the cover is cool, because the cover is like a skeleton with like vampire teeth, but then like a green helmet, and it looks like a Manila Road kind of imagery. Yep. And you're like, that looks pretty cool. And then it's like, and you're like, it just sort of broke my brain, you know. And
do you think, though, that like the cover art, though, is something like, it is low budget across the board. Every album cover is pretty grim, but yeah. I guess like they must have been selling these cheaper. Like, it must have been, if a copy of an Iron Maiden record was like 5 guilders, then this must have been
One of the bands is called Superbad. I couldn't find that even as a link. Nile Temple. Kalashnikov was where it started. Okay, hang on. We need to stop and start once again. And then we need to start with Kalashnikov, by the way. I need to get to that bit. All right, hang on. I got it. Second. This is the bit with the whistling. Damn it. Which song?
I think it's the first song. It's got like a horrible intro, and then like after a minute, okay, it just breaks into some whistling over the top of it.
The cover is all these people being tortured, and then it has in the middle of it an Ilse Koch from Buchenwald, like concentration camp, just like in the middle of the artwork. Maybe this is it. Wait. Hang on. No! I'm sure I can play this, can't I?
I'm not sure. Maybe.
The whistling bit, though.
Like a minute in.
Hang on. This guy who posted this, he likes the whistling bit. He said that, or maybe this is it. So, 1988.
Well, I think that one's, it's the second Kalashnikov album. The one with the picture of the desert and a Kalashnikov on the cover.
Oh, you're right. Fuck. We're not going to get the
You're not going to feel the benefit of the whistling, and like this has to be, this
it has to be heard.
It puts the Scorpions to absolute shame, you know.
No. I mean, that's what I wanted to start off by, with that whistling. But now you fucking,
hold on. I'll find it and play it into my phone.
Surely can't be pulled up over. You know, the Kalashnikov lawyers are going to. Oh, here we are. Hang on. Oh no, that's JJ Tull. Oof. Do you see what this has made of our lives?
It's not good, is it?
Oh, here we go. Hang on. Wait, I've got it. For people watching this who are just like, what are these two idiots doing? When you hear the whistling, you will understand, like...
Check out the album cover. It's fucking insane. Like, it's absolutely insane. Like,
All right, hang on. Come on, you slow piece of shit. This is going to make good viewing, isn't it?
Yeah, people will be enthralled.
But
it's close. There it is. There. Right, so it's 34 seconds in.
Okay, yeah.
Of Cesar Witch is the name of the song by Kalashnikov.
Yeah.
Now, this might seem like a waste of your time watching this video, ladies and gentlemen, but I assure you it's not, because you're going to hear.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Here's some excellent whistling in heavy metal.
Yeah, I mean,
said we'll put the scorpions right to fucking bed.
Yeah. Oh, computer just doesn't. I think my computer knows it's trying to sabotage this because it knows how many people it's going to upset. Do you know what I mean?
All right, well, I'm going to stick it on here and you're going to have to bear with it in the worst possible quality here, okay?
Hang on.
They're running wild, like, you know, right off in the Zen power. Yeah.
It's really upset me. Like, it's like I stopped what I was doing, which was like, I think I was listening to like Sabotage by Black Sabbath. And you sent me a message and I took the needle off the record going, all right, I need to see what this is about. And I played it and I was just like, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do with this. So there's, you've got Trashy and Killer Floss Fucker making love on electric chair. And this is a weird sort of like white power exploitation album, the guy has said. It's got weird, pervy lyrics and awful vocals. And it's sort of like, it's like they try to cash in on like sort of right wing punk.
Did he say that they had some sort of German band that was like a skinhead band or like a more extreme Mac Lads type of fur, but ended up doing really well. And I think that probably financed all the rest of the bollocks that was going on the label. Like, you know,
it's like they're just flinging stuff everywhere and they're going, fuck it, sure, let's make a right-wing punk record. It's hilarious. Like, it's so awful. Extreme Napalm Terror, which is supposed to be grindcore.
Yeah, but it's like, it's weird the way they would do that. Like, this is like, this album came out in 1990. How did they know in 1990 that it was a good idea to exploit Napalm Death and, you know, fucking Extreme Noise Terror's name? Those bands were not even fucking huge bands by then.
It doesn't seem to even have song titles, this record. It doesn't even seem to have lyrics. It's just, I don't know. It's like what they did is he and his mate got, I can't even say they got like fucking coked up or something like this. I'd say they got a bunch of cheap cider in. They have a cheap studio in his shed in the back garden. And they wrote like 50 songs one weekend with slightly different settings and told them, yeah, well, that'll do. And then got their mates to just come in and shout over them. Because the ones with the female singing are like, it's
fucking insane.
Yeah. So there's one record here that's actually kind of normal, Black Virgin with the guitar, and that's sort of like Venom Warfare. It could have been on Neat Records. It's not terrible. I didn't, to be honest, because it was almost quite good, it sort of ruined things a bit for me. Thrash Queen Manslayer, which is like sort of like anti-male thrash metal with four girls who are definitely not on the record. They're just like four, they look like four glammy kind of girls.
The songs are all called like Let's Make Love in the Refrigerator, you know?
Well, yeah.
I don't know what the fuck. I don't know. Like, I guess the thing possibly was that this guy was releasing all these records thinking one of these bands will catch on. And when that does, me and my mate who plays the guitar are off to Valhalla, like, you know.
I mean, the Killer Fox is...
They have a song called Orgasm of Death, and it's one of the best songs I've ever heard. Like, it's up there with Sword of Sagon, where the intro is just so long and involved. You're like, what the fuck is going on?
It's... I mean...
Here, 40,039.
All the albums start with this kind of thing.
Yeah, and like, that's the year, is the year 40,039.
It's...
it's class. Turn it up so the people can hear it there.
Cover is it was on for ages. And the cover, I stared at the cover for ages while I was listening to this, and it's like, at first it looks like a sort of something you see in a Japanese restaurant of somebody like filleting a piece of sashimi or something, like, you know, but it's not. It's a guy whose head is like a dragon attacking a fish.
I thought it was a snake. Is it a fish? Is it?
Well, it's a snake. It's true. It's a snake. With a conscious and naked woman just thrown into the background as a cloud. It's really upset me. Well, I mean,
it's actually one of the more high budget, though, Metal Enterprises covers, because it seems to be drawn with some competence. Whereas if you think of like the cover of that J.J. Tull album,
I'm going to play J.J. Tull now, just in the background. Because. Singing. No. It's the Miss Marlene one we want, isn't it?
Lily Marlene.
If that wasn't enough for you, here we go. Lily Marlene. Okay, here we go.
Let's just add these as links so that people can enjoy them in the totality of rock.
Sent this to like at least six people who've come back upset with me. Go, what are you sending me this shit for? And I go,
it's really important that people hear this. This is like seeing the Zapruder tapes part two.
So when it's what's happened,
very, very important.
Because it's upset me, I want to upset other people with it. Do you know?
Absolutely. Like, and as you said, occasionally you will see things that for some reason are actually okay, like Metal Exploitation, Metal Enterprises, they did one of the Crossfire albums, you know, the Belgian thrash band. Yeah. And I think, you know, that is the Swedish, the like sort of AOR band Escape, they did one of their records as well. And etc. etc. But I guess these were bands who were on labels like Mausoleum, and then once they got kicked off Mausoleum, they were looking for a home, and Metal Enterprises was sitting going, come to me, my love.
What fascinates me then about Metal Enterprise, they also seem to have picked up like the sort of the copyright of dead named bands, like bands who disappeared, and just like reimagined them with nothing compared to their previous sound, with totally different members, and just like taking their logo. Which is, I don't know.
Rock and roll does have a history of this kind of stuff. Like Fleetwood Mac, there were When they were on tour in America, there was another version of Fleetwood Mac who were out on tour as well, like, you know, just call themselves Fleetwood Mac. And they were hired by Fleetwood Mac's managers to go out there and pretend to be Fleetwood Mac.
What? So there was just two of them? But I mean, at any
The real Fleetwood Mac who were in the studio making a record in L.A., and their managers had hired a bunch of fucking ne'er-do-wells and called them Fleetwood Mac. But you'll know this as well. This is an interesting side bit. It's not really metal exploitation, but it's the same idea. In about 1970, Thin Lizzy, the three-piece Thin Lizzy, recorded a record of Deep Purple covers.
Really?
Yeah, have you ever heard that now?
No.
And that was, again, that was like some label said, yeah, Deep Purple are real popular. Could you record a load of Deep Purple songs?
Well, I know that it was a common thing for labels. If one band on the label was doing really well in 69 to 72, another band wasn't, to try and get the band doing well, do a cover of one of their songs to boost their career, which is what you can see Black Sabbath did that. Also, like maybe Judas Priest, Better By You, Better Than Me, Spooky Tooth. They were on the same label.
I think maybe they like
the song. I don't know, but it's not a bad song. But Sabbath definitely. I mean, there's covers on all of the, like, the first Sabbath albums. What, two covers on them? You got the Wizard, the Warning as well. You know.
Yeah, that's it. The Lizzy album is called Funky Junction. So it is.
Ever even heard of that?
So it's on YouTube. Funky Junction plays a tribute to the music of Deep Purple. But yeah, it's just like saying Fireball, Black Knight, and et cetera,
really?
Yeah.
So Phil Lynott is singing
Black. I don't know if Phil Lynott is singing. It might actually be instrumental, but it's definitely, it's the three lads from the OG Lizzy.
Eric Bell. Eric Bell is on that. Wow. That's it's momentarily shifted me off the memory of Lily Marlene by JJ Tull.
JJ Tull, and there's like so much stuff like that where it's kind of like a guy will be called Johnny Scandal, and like they're like, check it out, there's a video by a guy called Johnny Scandal, and it's kind of like a really lame Billy Idol, but again mixed with Schlager music, like, you know. And oh god, it's so hard to stomach, but you really want to listen to it.
I wish we could figure out how to play it and look at it, which is, I guess that's what reaction people do, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I guess we can just intersplice it with people rocking out to Johnny Scandal and being like, holy shit.
Well, I suppose back then so many things were actually selling some, like, lots of records. It was just kind of like, well, the four of us might try as well get together and make a...
Totally. I mean,
that was kind of what Poison was, wasn't it?
Absolutely, and that was the thing. Like, you hear people like Max Scavler and James Hetfield talking about that with the first Maiden album, as in going in, and they were like, we'd never heard this. We had no frame of reference whatsoever, apart from it looked cool.
Yeah.
And it's the same as, like, we kind of grew up going into VHS shops and you looked at the cover of the video and that was the important thing.
Yeah.
So, like, if you look at all those exploitation videos in, like, you know, Italy and stuff, there was always a ton of helicopters and shit on the cover of the videos, and there was very seldom helicopters in the movies. You know, they're just like, if we blow the load on the front cover, people might buy this, like, you know.
You see, this is a realm of stuff that I don't know very much about, because for some reason in the 80s when most kids were getting on there, movies that you love, I was not. I mean, I didn't see Rambo till I was in my 30s and stuff like so.
The first Rambo film, First Blood, is it?
That's it, yeah. I seem to have missed all these sort of, you know, First Blood, Schwarzenegger reference things. They're just not in my, I don't know what I was doing, but I was.
Were you not pleasantly surprised by First Blood and how highbrow it was? No.
I thought it was great, actually, yeah. Although, having said that, I did like the last one, where he seemed to kill about 3,000 people.
Oh, is this Rambo versus the Mexicans, was it?
Oh, is that, that's another one I don't know about. Rambo just versus the Mexicans, is that the name?
Yeah, so they did one about 10 years ago. It was like Rambo murders a million people in, like, Burma. And then they did one about 3 years ago where he had short hair and it was Rambo versus the border crisis, like, you know.
Oh, really? With Sylvester Stallone?
Yeah, it's really bad. I wouldn't watch it.
But isn't that the reason why you'd watch it, though?
No, because, like, I thought that last one, the one from, isn't you talking about the one where it's like him going to rescue a load of missionaries and that one was really good. It was, you know, just does what it says on the tin, kind of Rambo, wasn't it?
There was an awful lot of at people and paddy fields going up and like.
Yeah, and the baddies were real baddies, because as well as being baddies, they're also pedos or something like that, weren't they? I seem to recall.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, I mean.
But yeah, so like, go on. We're going to go back to our topic of this evening, metal exploitation. Like, is there anything else you can think of outside of these labels? Like, because it is it's the same vibe. If you went on holidays, you would go and get a Best of Iron Maiden tape that was not by Capitol Records or EMI Records.
It
Fly by Night distributors, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was one of the first times when I went to Eastern Europe in the late 90s, delighted in getting like AC/DC bootlegs by some, you know, with like Xeroxed fucking cover or something like this, you know?
Yeah. Like, I think that's where this is where it all came from. The idea that back in the heyday of physical media, people were willing to pay for anything as long as it looked vaguely like the real McCoy, you know?
But
kind of like cheap cigarettes, you know?
But I'm still just like, sorry, I'm still sort of staggered by this, you know, this Metal Enterprises thing. And I also realize I don't have any of the releases. Like, and I also don't remember ever seeing them in secondhand stores in Dublin or something, you know?
But that begs the question, what sort of distribution did these records have? Did these albums only come out in Germany or, you know?
I mean, all of them like are a kind of mystery to me that I've never flick through, like none of them look familiar to me as if I've seen the cover and gone, oh, Black Virgin. Like, I've never like looked through a secondhand record store. I found one secondhand record store in France there a while ago on tour, and literally the entire bin, which was about 100, 200 records, was 80s metal records I didn't know.
Yeah.
And used some of the names. And I think I took about 10 pictures and sent them to you of just shitty, awful album covers and just, look at this fucking shit. And I realized, like, it's like the tip of the iceberg. There's just so much of that stuff out there that I just don't know, you know?
Well, I think that there's probably a good reason why you don't know a lot of the stuff is that it's not worth knowing about, like, you know? But that's why we, your humble servants in Metal Salvage, are here listening to it. So, well, in this case, it's not so you don't have to. It's so that you have to, look, you know?
Yeah, are you filling up your crack pipe there to, what do they call it, punk?
I'm having a honk of a bifter in the name of Metal Enterprises and their greatness. But yeah, it is weird. Like, I think it's something that has probably died with the end of physical media being that kind of thing. You know, cheap DVDs of films that were trying to be like Robocop, or, you know, cheap metal albums that were trying to be like Iron Maiden or whatever, you know.
Because there's no physical sales anymore. There's no.
Exactly. You can't trick people into buying something. Now they have to see the trailer or hear a snippet of the song. They're not going to just buy it on a whim the way that we used to whenever we were kids, you know.
I mean, there are some records out there now that I've, you know, it's kind of jog my goldfish memory of people just pretending to be like some other band and pretending to do like a black metal album. I mean, there's been an awful lot of that in the last 20, 25 years. I like punks going, we can make a black metal record and just like, you know, having a go at it. And just,
I think some bands did it with kind of, like, if you listen to the first Manic Street Preachers album, that was just them trying to be Guns N' Roses, like, you know.
Really?
Yeah. It's just like sort of, that's what a stylissimo.
The only thing I liked about that band was that if you tolerate this, your children would be next. I quite like that sort of maudlin song.
I think most people who are watching this, as eyebrows have went up and down at that sentence, they're like, what? Okay, right, fair enough.
If you tolerate this, that's the only one I remember being like, oh, that's not so bad, because I think it was like my mate was trying to convince me that they were like sort of, you know, punky rock and roll, and was trying to play me Motorcycle Emptiness, and I was like, yeah, okay. But I think at the time I was just like, well, you just listen to Motorhead instead of this, it's probably better off. But you
know, you'd be much happier listening to. Well, you know what? They're always, I guess, for some reason, they always sort of remind me of, like, you know, like the Wild Hearts, you know?
Oh, yeah.
People who wanted some sort of regional version of the Stones or whatever.
The Wild Hearts were on the cover of, like, every other Kerrang! Offensive buy in the 1990s.
The guy from them, the guitar player, Ginger, started out as the backup auxiliary guitar player for Avenger. Do you remember Avenger, the new album band?
Yeah. Wow. We played a gig with Avenger once. I think it was like Keep It True Warm Up. It was us, Avenger, and like Bitches Sin or something. And, the guy from Avenger was wearing a cape, I think, which I was really happy with.
He was probably looking at you being all like, that guy is dressed like Nelson's Column over here. What the fuck is going on?
They were good, though. I liked their video where they're driving around in a Hiace somewhere in Sunderland in like 1981. you know, smashing shit up with fucking hammers and things in a like a brickyard, which is, I quite like that.
Definitely, that's one thing you always see about those Neat Records videos from around that stage. You can really feel the air of despair and depression, like, can't you? Look, it's like watching Undertones or Stiffl-Fingers videos from the 70s. You're like, God, they're really dying to get out of here, aren't they? Look.
There's a brilliant documentary about girls' school, which is like, it's Carolyn Quentin is presenting it. It's a UTV thing. It's on YouTube. It's about...
I've seen that, where they go to girls' schools like fucking Scooby-Doo house, where they're all living together with their dog. Or
they're whatever. All like, oh, waking up out of their sleeping bags and making coffee. And like, we've got to run to the gig. But then she goes in the van with them around England. And it's great because she's there trying to interview all these lads in the queue waiting to see girls' school. And she goes, and she's there and trying to make a sort of, I guess, proto-feminist sort of like, do you think it's good that, you know, girls are up there, you know, blah, blah, blah. And these guys are going, oh, I don't know, never thought, but we just like them because they're heavy. Got heavy riffs, yeah, and she's like trying to make it kind of a, you know, an interesting point. They go, don't you know, just like,
but that's one thing you would have to absolutely give girls school 100% credit for. Like, they were not image based or anything. It was all 100% based on people who like pub rock and denim and leather rock and roll. Like, you know,
I mean,
it wasn't about being all like, let's wear fucking short skirts or anything.
I think
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, by the way. I'm just saying that was not,
I think they tried to get to do that maybe a bit by 83-84, but the first few, yeah, for sure. We played a few gigs with them, actually, as in we were put for two weekends in a row. We were next to them and played on the same stage in Sweden Rock and something else. And they were great. We're hanging out and drinking whiskey with them.
Man, we did that as well.
Some makeup tips with the girl from girl school.
I got given off to for using the toilet backstage. So I did.
Did you?
Yeah, I did indeed. Well, like, which one of you lads has been in there taking a shit? It smells awful in there.
I think that's
a great crack. You know, they're great at crack. And, like, you know, the fucking, they were probably at the fucking extreme sharp end of, could you imagine the sort of shite they would have been getting off fucking Sound Men and shit like that in the 80s, just for the sake of it? It would have been excruciating looking.
Yeah, they were like, they had this little manager guy with them when we played with them. They were next door to us. They're like, oh, you guys again. Brilliant.
He was our manager. Is this the Mexican he came, dude, with the beard?
No, this was a little English guy, and he was trying to get them to go back to the hotel after they played. They didn't want to. They all wanted to sit around drinking. So we were like, produced a bottle of Jack Daniels, and so it was like sunshine, whiskey, and we're all sitting at the same big table, lunch table, you know, kind of a little wooden thing, having the crack with them. And they were we were getting on famously, and he was like, kind of have to go, girls. And they were like, oh, this fucking Egypt, fuck off kind of thing, you know? Fucking pretty cool.
Good on him. But yeah, like, there you go. We've told you the story of absolutely horrendous heavy metal, which we
mean, and I don't think we've even really kind of, like, I still, like I said, I recommend the Colosseum. But all of the fake follow-ups, Trash Queens, Ashes to Ashes, this is absolutely insane. So this guy is in true exploitation fashion. They also re-edited, re-recorded, or even stole plenty of the most anonymous filler songs for their different recordings to simplify production. Like, some of the songs appear in other albums.
I'm not surprised by that at all.
They ripped off their logo from some World of Metal for some other compilation. So many bands. Repression, Thunderstorm, Mad Butcher, Burning Vision, Expect No Mercy.
Now, Mad Butcher is a class one, because Mad Butcher, it's the same as the Mad Butcher cover for Destruction. So they were literally hoping that somebody would go through the vinyl bin, see a picture of a Mad Butcher. This Mad Butcher is feeding a flying V into a mincer, and guts are coming out the other end. But, like, that's the idea. You're just like, maybe someone's just going to accidentally buy this instead of the Destruction record, and then, you know.
A bit like 6 Feet Under covering the whole of Back in Black. I know what we'll do.
I don't think anybody's going to get confused and be all like, oh, shit, I accidentally bought 6 Feet Under's version instead of... It's one of those things, like, because, you know, like, didn't Dream Theater do that and do all of Number of the Beast?
Hang on. I just have to... Wait. Hang on. Just show it to people. Hang on. Look, there's that Mad Butcher thing. Oh, no, that's stupid for me trying to show people that. That's incredible. It is a Mad Butcher feeding a guitar into a grinder. That's incredible. Yep. And they just went, let's just copy that.
That sounds cool.
And maybe, do they think like a couple of hundred people were going to go, I'm really confused by this. Hang on.
Yeah, look at that. Yes.
That's fucking mental. And I've never seen that. And he's got a lot of guitars behind him ready to go as well.
Because he's going to turn them all into guts as well.
Fucking hell. So...
what have we learned from talking about this? Is there anything, like, is there anything positive you can say apart from there's a lot more music out there we all have to listen to, or we all just put on blue penny glasses, or what?
We could go back to your songwriting on the New Age and Steel, maybe, you know, or we could discuss, we could go back to J.J. Tull. Now, hang on, I was going to make a point there, but I can't, I was put off. You so threw me with that Mad Butcher thing. Now I've been...
Well, we were briefly talking about the idea of bands covering other bands' full albums and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Did the DC record, and Dream Theater had done a couple of records and whatnot.
I was about to throw 6 Feet under the bus, which I think is fair enough. But after their Graveyard Classics, now that sold a lot of records, that first one, like 60, 70,000 copies or something. They just went, I will just do another one. And then they went, you know what? What's the biggest selling rock album of all time? Let's just cover the whole thing. Like, imagine hearing 6 Feet Under do Have a Drink on Me and Shoot to Thrill. And
anyway. I don't want to imagine that happening to me.
No.
I would way rather listen to a bit more Metal Enterprises records.
But Kalashnikov,
You know, it's a strange thing, isn't it? Covers, like, I know you're not a fan, but I'm a fan of Ugly Kid Joe. I kind of grew up listening to them. And whenever you go and see them, the end of their show, they do, like Back in Black, or not, Highway to Hell and Ace of Spades and something else, where you're a bit like, you know, would you like to go and see Iron Maiden playing, you know, Black Sabbath songs?
No. But are you comparing Iron Maiden to, Jethro Tull, but no, not Jethro Tull, Ugly Kid Joe. No. I mean,
no, what I'm saying to you is you don't want to go and see a band going and playing a whole bunch of covers at an end of a set, especially if you're like, I like this band. They haven't played a whole bunch of songs that they should play. You know?
I remember a bunch of Punch and Stench played here before they quit being Punch and Stench a long time ago. And I knew a few people who were really into them. And I think they made a whole big day out of going out, you know, coming up, traveling to see Punch and Stench. Punch and Stench was the last day of their tour. And they were just messing. They were playing like Sharp Dressed Man and just doing covers just for the laugh. And so they traveled all the way up to see them, and they got to see Punch and Stench mainly messing around doing AC/DC and ZZ Top covers, and they were fucking thick about it, like fucking annoyed, you know? Whereas Punch and Stench would always just goof around a bit. They was like, yeah, whatever.
We're going to Keep It True once, and I was talking to somebody in the car park, and Malice were playing. And I was like, oh, yeah, I can't wait to go and see Malice. It's going to be killer. And they're like, yeah. And it's like, oh, it's a shame James Riviera is singing for them instead of the OG guy. And the guy just burst into fucking tears right in front of my face. And was like, what are you talking about? You saying that James Neal isn't going to be here? And I was like, yeah. And he's all like, oh, and walked off crying.
Wow.
Who would have thought Malice would have elicited such emotions? Like, you know.
He got the feels. He got like super... Yeah, well, I mean, sort of like a football player losing the World Cup or something. It's similar level, you know, like sportsmen crying at whatever else.
I might have cried like that if it had been James Neal singing for Malice instead of... Because the thing is, like, right, James Riviera is a cool singer, but, you know, it's one of the things. I think he was singing for Agent Steel that weekend as well. You're like, oh, okay, right, grand. Well, I guess this is okay, you know.
And how do you feel about James Riviera's metal wave?
I feel that it is a wave of sadness.
I made Paradise Lost on the tour we just did. I sat them down and made them watch Everybody Wants to Rule the World. I interrupted
all of it.
At least 2-3 minutes of it. I interrupted their pre-gig sort of, you know, sitting around watching stuff, getting ready to play. I interrupted that by making them all stop what they were doing to come over and look at that.
Lovely. I did actually the same thing to my girlfriend about a month ago. We were in the car and I was like, okay, I'll pay for dinner tonight if you listen to the entirety of the song.
It staggers me. It just, my brain is like, I have to watch all, I've watched it several times. This is the thing, is that sometimes things like this are so, they sort of capture my imagination somewhat in a, because I'm kind of thinking, going, what's
should probably explain to people that This is the guy from Hellstar, who's a legitimately brilliant singer and lyricist and stuff like that, has got a band called Metal Wave, where he does, which Alan's like, well, I don't know if he's that great. Like,
no, he's not, but he's good.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway.
We are Hellstar fans. We're Hellstar fans. That's going to bring in the views, but we are Hellstar fans. Especially you.
I thought you were going to say that's going to bring in the hate from the Hellstar massive. They're going to descend on us.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so he has this band called Metal Wave, where they do covers of like Gary Numan, and it's like new wave songs done in a metal way. But holy shit, this version of Everybody Wants to Rule the World, goddamn, like it's.
Yeah.
It really misses it. It misses the point in an unbelievable fashion.
Like, it's also got lots of like new rock boots and leather waistcoats in the video, and vampire teeth, and it's.
And that was one of the things that people were immediately. They were like, "Why is James Riviera dressed as a vampire in this when he's a vampire in Hellstar? Is he just always a vampire now? Is he now? If I met him downtown at Super Value, would he be a vampire?"
Yeah, well, that's obviously the thing, is that. Well, he's fully transitioned or into being a vampire. And so it doesn't matter. He could be doing country western and he's vampiric.
Yeah. I would like to meet him in daytime and then start crying in front of him and say, I can't believe you're not a real vampire. Look, you lied to me.
Yeah, but you say that, but you don't know that. What if he is?
Well, I have met him before, but in fairness, it's only ever been at nighttime. So I cannot confirm if he's a real vampire or not.
Well, I saw him during the day at Headbangers Open Air.
Was this a long time ago, was it?
No, it was only 2 years ago, and he was backstage, and he was eating what looked like a sausage or some description.
Did he have vampire teeth in?
See, I wasn't that close. Well, I did observe him in the daylight. Like,
it could have been a blood sausage.
This is it, so I remain... I'm going to sit on the fence of whether he's a real vampire or not. A bit like the Middle East. I'm going to sit on the fence of taking one side or the other. You know what I mean?
It's truly a noble place to be, right on the fence there, my friend.
Yeah, and they're very similar. They're very similar arguments, I think. Is James Riviera a vampire or not? And anyway, back to Metal Enterprises.
So this is one of the weird things about it, is that there is no trace whatsoever of who this guy is.
It's like he made enough money to buy a boat and a house somewhere in the country and went, right, it's enough, 91, off we go, bye-bye, and just disappeared. Because it only really exists for about 5-6 years.
Yeah. Well, there was a label in England in the mid-2000s called Rising Records.
Oh.
And
I've heard of
that. They ran a label. So the label and, sorry, obviously it was a label, but they ran a studio as well. And the deal was that the bands would pay the label 10 grand to record the album in their studio, and then they would get 50% of the albums and blah, blah, blah.
The pressing and the promo. Yeah, I remember this guy. I heard about this guy.
So I think there was one band, maybe Trigger the Bloodshed, did a record with him, and then like Sworn Amongst and bands of that nature or whatever. And anyway, the guy ended up making whatever it was, like 70 or 80 grand, and just shut the label up and moved to the Bahamas the next day. Like, and that was it.
The August Burns Red, is that the, no, I don't, something blah blah blah. Yeah, Rising Records, yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, where was it, like a Trigger the Bass Drums or no, fucking me being an insulting cow. Trigger the Bloodshed was the name of the band. Are they on them?
Rise. No. Yeah, okay. But yeah, no, there's a Bleed From Within, Sworn Against, Trigger the Bloodshed, Cocoon, Firebrand. Yeah. I've never heard of a single one of these bands, except I've heard the name Trigger the Bloodshed. I don't even know what it sounds like. And yeah, I heard this from, he may have sent some of those bands to record in with some people that I know. And it was, I don't know. But I've heard this about the, what's this festival?
I think that's probably where it's a Devilstone, is it?
No, that's in Lithuania, at the Latvia. No, the one in Slovenia is Metal Bays.
Oh, right.
The guy has another.
I guess so. That's probably where the exploitation side of it has kind of moved these days, man, because it's hard to fool a punter, because a punter is going to want to see or hear what it looks like or sounds like or whatever.
So,
whereas a band is much easier to fool, like, as in, there's a whole bunch of people out there, like, I'm not going to name names, but there's plenty of guitar players who, if you give them $500 or $1,000, will do a solo or etc. Maybe that's a more legitimate trade of goods and services. But yeah, there's so many wee tiny labels or management companies. Like there's bands in Ireland where they're paying $100 a month to go and be managed by some people. Right, they might get them onto a couple of festivals, but you know, you're still essentially paying to play, really, aren't you?
Yeah, or not, as the case may be. They might get you to some few things locally, but it's very hard to get them onto. You might get to play a few things in Europe if you pay your own way to get there, maybe on the, you know, but an awful lot of the PR companies are, you know, I mean, what is the click-through rate for links and emails, regardless of who's pushing them or not? If it's unsolicited, it's like 2-3%. And if you have to follow a link through, I mean, I know myself, I get tons every day because I'm on this Haulix, which is a digital promo link for journalists. So somebody somewhere still has me down from when I was zero tolerance and writing for Terrorizer and all this stuff years ago. I'm still in that, if I can remember my login code, but I keep getting, like every day I'll have X amount. And if I go into the trash, just relentless barrage of, there's just so much music constantly. And you think to yourself, even if I know the band, the chances of me opening the link unsolicited is tiny. And so so there are people out there making money from PR just pushing the email around. And then if for a band, if you can see no correlation to yourself, your statistics moving, it's very difficult. How do you get any of those kind of things, you know?
Absolutely. And I guess that was the whole thing back in the 80s, whenever, even when you're talking about a band as small as like someone like Exciter or Violence, they were going out on tour and then seeing their record sales increase by like 40,000 copies.
Well, let's quantify that, because I think Exciter sold quite a lot of records in the early 80s. Violence, for example, I think I read that the John Lightmer did 30,000 or something. But I mean, with Exciter, you're talking about a band that probably sold 200,000 copies, 250,000.
Oh, probably more. But like, what I mean is bands of any of that description were still in a position where the tour support was actually reaping a reward.
Yeah.
Like if you paid to bring Dark Angel to like Europe to go and do a tour as Music for Nations, you're probably actually going to make your money back pretty handily.
Yeah, I mean, what happened was that you toured to promote your album. Now you make an album to do a tour. And that changed somewhere about 10, maybe 15 years ago, you know. So there's a very big difference now. I mean, you know what it's like. You release an album, it has about a month long, if you're lucky, cycle of interest based around the video, sometimes 2 or 3 weeks, and then the spike goes down. And if you tour, the spike doesn't go up, you know.
No, it doesn't really at all, man. Like, that's, you know, it's a weird one, like, but the idea at the end of the day should be you're making an album because you like making music. You know, you're not making an album to hope to break through to some sort of bigger audience, really. Like, you're doing it.
I think your aspirations have definitely changed in the last 10, 15, 20 years. Hang on, I'm going to have to stop listening.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.